host. He silently placed tumbler and water jug before the guest. He watched the unembarrassed officer deliberately diluting his grog, then tossing it off in three swallows, pushing the empty tumbler away, settling himself in his seat and smacking his lips with satisfaction. The master broke the silence. There lurked a rueful reproach in his voice. "Lieutenant, you are going to take my best man." "I know," rejoined the other, immediately drawing back the tumbler to replenish it. "Sorry."
"You don't understand, Lieutenant. Before that young fellow, my forecastle was a rat pit of quarrels. It was black times aboard the rights. But Billy came, and it was like a Catholic priest striking peace in an Irish shindy. Not that he preached to them or did anything in particular, but a virtue went out of him, sugaring the sour ones. They took to him like hornets to treacle. All but the big shaggy chap with the fire red whiskers. He out of envy, perhaps, and thinking such a sweet fellow, as he mockingly designated him, could hardly have the spirit of a gamecock, tried to get up an ugly row with him. Billy forbore and reasoned with him in a pleasant way, but nothing served. So one day, Red Whiskers insultingly gave Billy a dig under the ribs. Quick as lightning, Billy let fly his arm. I dare say he never meant to do quite as much as he did, but he gave the burly fool a terrible drubbing. It took about half a minute. The lubber was astonished, and Red Whiskers now really loves Billy. They all love him. Some of them do his washing or darn his old trousers for him. Anybody will do anything for Billy Budd. It's the happy family here. But if that young fellow goes, I know how it will be aboard the rights. You are going to take away my peacemaker." "Well," said the officer who had listened with amused interest, "blessed are the peacemakers, especially the fighting peacemakers. And such are the 74 beauties of yonder warship," pointing through the cabin window at the Indomitable. "Don't look so downhearted. His Majesty will be delighted, in a time when his hard tack is not sought by sailors, a time when some shipmasters resent the borrowing of a tar or two for the service, to learn that one shipmaster cheerfully surrenders to the King the flower of his flock, a sailor who, with equal loyalty, makes no dissent." The lieutenant glanced through the cabin's open door, spying Billy. "Here comes Apollo with his portmanteau." The lieutenant stepped out. "Billy, you can't take that big box aboard a warship. Put your duds in a bag." The transfer made, the lieutenant pushed off from the rights of man, the merchant ship's name. But when the boat swept under the merchantman's stern, the new recruit jumped up, waving his hat to his silent shipmates sorrowfully looking at him, and bade the lads a genial goodbye, then making a salutation to the ship herself. "Goodbye to you too, rights of man." "Down, sir!" roared the lieutenant, instantly assuming all the rigour of his rank, though with difficulty repressing a smile. To be sure, Billy's actions was a terrible breach of naval decorum, but in that decorum he had never been instructed. As to his enforced enlistment, maybe he rather liked this adventurous turn in his affairs. Aboard the Indomitable, our merchant sailor was rated an able seaman and assigned to the starboard watch of the foretop. He was soon at home in the service, not at all disliked for his unpretentious good looks and genial air. In marked contrast, other individuals impressed into the ship's company were apt to fall into sullenness. But they were not so young as our foretopman, and may have had wives and children left in uncertain circumstances. Billy Budd was young, and despite his fully developed frame, looked even younger than he really was, owing to a lingering adolescent expression in the smooth face. The abrupt transition to the more knowing world of a great warship might have abashed him had there been any conceit in his composition. As the handsome sailor, Billy Budd's position aboard the 74 was analogous to that of a rustic beauty transplanted into the high-born dames of court. But this change of circumstances he scarce noted. Cast in a mould peculiar to the finest physical examples, his face showed humane good nature. But this was subtly modified by another and pervasive quality. The shapely ear, the arch of foot, the curve in mouth. But, above all, something in the mobile expression. All this strangely indicated a lineage in direct contradiction to his lot. The mysteriousness became less mysterious when Billy, being formally mustered into the service, was asked his place of birth. "I don't know." "Then who was your father?" "God knows, sir." Struck by the straightforward simplicity of these replies, the officer asked, "Do you know anything about your beginning?" "I was found in a pretty silk..."